music, news, information. Weekday mornings from 11.
This is Northside Today.
On the line now have Margaret Martin, and she's the director of Women's Aid. Good afternoon, Margaret. How are you?
Not too bad at all. How are you doing yourself?
Okay. Now you've had the recent launch, Violence Against Women. There. So how do you get this across to people in the strongest possible way?
In terms of the femicide research,
indeed.
I think it's so
yes,
strong.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's so strong in itself, and it's really important that we do get it across, and it's very stark, and hopefully people will start to change their thinking, because what our research has shown very clearly is that that the place that women are at most danger is in their own home and from somebody they know, whether that's a partner, an ex-partner, or a family member or an acquaintance. So all of those messages that women are getting about, and there is danger on the street, I'm not for a minute minimising that, but all of those messages, to, you know, that it's strangers, that it's danger on the street, are misleading. This is 20 years of data that we have gathered, we have checked with the Gardaí, and it's a very, very clear message that we need to take on board.
Mm.
And I think one of the things that's encouraging is that the Gardaí are now working on changing their practice. They're working on doing much more risk assessment, risk management, and looking at then domestic homicides, and looking at what they can learn to make women safer in terms of the future. And the other when I was reading a little bit in terms of background for it, there is a very different dynamic, if you like, in terms of where women and men are killed. And men tend to be, it's much more on the street. And that's actually, I was looking at a global study that was done, and that's something that's consistent almost across the world, that men are at least threatened in their own home, whereas women are most threatened in their own home. So that we need different responses for both. We definitely need to deal with the violence on the streets, but we do need to deal with violence for women that are in intimate relationships. And of those women who were murdered, a quarter of them were from ex-partners that they were killed.
Mm-hmm.
So the people's idea that they, you know, once you leave the relationship, they're going to be safe, is a fallacy. It needs to be, you know, there needs to be, in terms of identifying women that are high risk,
okay,
and putting in measures to protect them.
As a couple of things to it, Margaret, to cover. First of all, is it more prevalent now today? I mean, it's such an insidious practice, if you want to call it that.
Yeah.
Is it coming more into the light now, or in the research and statistics, does it show that it's more common now because of the environment and because of society today? Or is it just coming to light now, but it was always like that, if you know what I mean?
Yeah, I suppose I wish there was more information so I could give you a more sort of full answer.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Women's Aid started doing this in 1996, and in 1996, 19 women were murdered. Then the previous year, there was, I think by May of 1996, 8 women already had been murdered, which was more than the previous year. So the beginning of 1996, there were women being murdered almost every second week. So it was quite a dramatic increase over the previous year or two. And that pattern, you know, it was very high. The number of murders in 1996 and 1997 were very high. And then they dropped, and they kind of levelled off, to use that terrible expression, mm-hmm, when we're talking about something as dark as this, to kind of an average of 10 to 12. And they've decreased. So it's very hard to know, is this just a blip? You know, is what has caused this? Because as you say, what maybe has triggered it, and what will change it are the things we really ultimately are trying to learn from it.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I suppose, like, what was interesting about that research that I looked at globally was that it's very consistent that there tends to be kind of a level of women who are murdered in their own home consistently in almost every society. And I think where we need to look at is actually identifying information that maybe could have been shared better, that could have been acted on, and that's really what we want to use this for, so that we are able to see, you know, where women are at risk and children are at risk, because there's 16 children who are murdered alongside their mothers. and what are the factors that we maybe need to be paying attention to, and who needs to bring this into the work that they do, you know, so that it's not just the Gardaí and domestic violence services, but to look much more broadly in society at who's likely to come in contact with people and, you know, what do they need to know.
Yeah, I suppose as well that the attitude of authorities and the Gardaí, I mean, and even the public themselves, that I don't know how far it can go back, but maybe 20, 30 years. And it was across the world, I think, where people's attitude would be, it's a domestic. If they hear anything, they're just inclined, attitude, that's just a domestic, and the guards shy away from it, and neighbours and friends as well.
Yeah, and I think that's a really good point, is that we need to change that. You know, that we need to realise that we have to change our attitudes. There is no acceptable level of violence. There's, you know, I think that cuts right across the board, but particularly when you're talking about domestic violence. We hear from women every day whose friends, whose family, whose supporters, whose colleagues have made a real difference in supporting them and helping them. And we know, you know, I mean, there was a case there recently in the year where a bypasser, somebody who lived nearby, actually saved a woman from what was possibly an attempted, you know, it seemed to be an attempted, a very serious assault with a hammer. And he went in and rescued a woman, you know, and there are those stories where somebody actually can prevent something happening. So it's about, you know, you look at the most extreme and then you work back to all of the smaller steps that can be put into place, identifying it earlier where there is a high level of risk, supporting women to get out of abusive relationships much earlier, all of those things. But I think you're right, that attitude of, oh, it's just a domestic, it's they've always been at each other, and turning a blind eye. We have to change that.
Okay, and of course, what way does it manifest itself to an extent? I mean, I'm sure in lots of cases, if it comes out, say during a courtship, that the signals are there. But what should people watch out for, maybe in the beginning of a marriage or a relationship in any sense of the word? Is there anything obvious that people can say, uh-oh, like if a woman's been told what way to dress and stuff like that?
Yeah, and I think that's a really good question to ask, you know, is like if they're, you know, like... Well, we have a campaign too into you, and we would say, like, if it feels wrong, it probably is. And as you say, if you're being regularly criticised for the way you dress, for the way you speak, for the way you, you know, for a whole range of different things, if you feel like that you're walking on eggshells, that you're afraid to say something, to know somebody who's losing their temper and is kind of giving you a verbal bashing, if you like. You know, if you feel afraid about what you can say and what you can do, the whole thing about isolation is huge. If you find that you're losing contact with friends and family and those who are close to you, you know, that's a really strong, consistent tactic that's used in abusive relationships. And that makes it so much more difficult then to get out of an abusive relationship if you haven't got support. If you have somebody who's checking up on you, if you're going out with your friends and saying, oh, I thought you were going to be home at 10. Oh, I thought you were going to be, you know, are you still out there? You know, that kind of thing. Now, obviously, you know, those things are very subtle, and it might be that somebody's just worried about you. And, you know, but if you're getting a pattern like that, just think about what's actually happening. And our helpline is available all the time. If you need to talk about it at that stage, things that you're uncomfortable with, things that you feel, you know, it's hard to say that they're much, but when you start to look at them, sometimes they are important that you pay attention to them. That's what we're there for.
Okay.
Feel free anytime to pick up the phone and ring us.
Okay, and the number is 1-800-341-900. That's 1-800-341-900. Is there anything that sort of gets on your goal to the extent, not a great expression to use, but anyway, TV, movies and stuff like that? Because it has been depicted in some harrowing documentaries that I've seen, especially one about a black woman in England in not too recent past. And it sort of... You wonder what way do people say, well, it's a drama, or an old movie like that they look upon, a blockbuster like Sleeping with the Enemy. But it indicates what we're talking about, telling someone how to dress.
Exactly. It does. And I suppose what I find difficult to deal with sometimes is that people like to kind of blame. So a lot of the time people would say, oh, you know, she's very vulnerable. Like, what is it about her? Instead of saying, what is it about him? you know, that to mm-hmm. shift that focus onto, you know, it is not appropriate to abuse people, to you know, and to control people and to physically abuse and sexually abuse. That really has to change. So they're the things that really, to use your phrase, to get in my goat, yeah.
It's to the extent as well, like, isn't the old expression, house, devil, street, angel as well, with
yes.
some of the things of the, yes. with the recent tragedy with the family, and that,
yes.
that like, he's sort of enamoured in public, and then when it comes out, actually, what's happened, that's a strange aspect to it as well. I mean, I was reading a report of the sister of one of the victims in the paper yesterday, and this is something she tried to get across, she's trying to get across as well.
Yes, and I think, you know, that we hear sometimes, you know, with that case, the Cavan murder suicide, you know, we immediately started getting calls from women who were saying, that could be me. I'm in a relationship with a partner who's controlling me, who's abusing me, and is a pillar of community. I mean, we don't know what was happening in that particular case, but what we do know is that he killed her and he killed the two children, and that he was a pillar of the community and well thought of and well respected. And for a lot of women, especially and particularly, you know, within their own community, whether it's a neighbourhood or it's a kind of a, you know, if they're very involved in a sport, whatever, so it's golf or it's football or some sort of activity, if they start to talk about it, sometimes they're pushed back. People don't mm-hmm. want to change their idea of this wonderful man, you know, and they're not open. And sometimes women are literally, you know, when they would go to somebody and look for help, they would, you know, they would get comments that are highly inappropriate, like, well, I never found him like that, or, you know, and maybe that you didn't find him like that, but he's not, you know, that's the thing about a street angel and the house devil, they're going to be very different to different people.
And of course, in some of the conversations that you hear as well in the discussions, that a lot of women themselves seem to come across saying, well, look, we don't want to be coming out as victims, so we want to be shown as strong women. So we don't believe really that culture's out there. So there's that contradiction there all the time as well.
Well, I think that's the thing, because there's such a victim-blaming culture, people don't realise how strong an awful lot of women are who are dealing with it. They tend to think of them as weak. They tend to, you know, they this victim sort of stereotype, rather than realising, you know, to survive in that relationship and to move on and to thrive. Like, I was talking to a young woman there fairly recently, and she said she had contacted Women's Aid over 20 years ago. I was surprised to know that she was so young. She said she went on, she brought up her three kids, they've had a very happy life, and she said she's so glad that she did that.
Mm.
You know, see, that's the same woman who was being abused. You know, she didn't change to be somebody else.
Yes.
So it is that we have all of these stereotypes, and we need to be very careful. And victims themselves can feel maybe that they're, you know, they're seen as that, and that image is being pushed back on them all the time. And they, you know, they so many women are doing all sorts of things to better protect themselves and their children, and they're really using all of their wits to do that. That we need to recognise that as well, that's happening. They're working very much about safeguarding themselves, and there can be a very high level of threat, as I said, and they need to be supported. They need the whole multi-agency response in order to change the level of threat and protect them and put the focus on the perpetrator.
Mm-hmm. And I suppose if some women sort of infer that there's something going on, some of the things that happen as well is, I mean, this cuts right across society, all classes, there's no,
absolutely.
You know. And sometimes if people, if they're inferring that something's going on, if people don't see marks, and maybe they're saying, well, he looks after you very well. I mean, look at how you have a car and the kids and the house and all that. They sort of maybe wipe it out of their mind as well. So that's a little bit of a misnomer as well. If there's no marks or anything like that, but it can do with mental torture.
Absolutely, yeah. You don't need a bruise to be abused, but equally, you know, very often where women are bruised is, you know, places that you wouldn't see, so that it can be, you know, places that are generally, you know, they would be hidden by their clothes.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I was at something recently, and they were talking about women in maternity settings and the number of women who, you know, who are abused at that point. But it is the one time when somebody's actually going to be looking at their abdomen and giving you a physical checkup. So, you know, and I think sometimes you'll see, you know, burn marks or scar marks or things like that. They wouldn't normally be seen by people, you know, in the normal course of events. I mean, the climate that we live in, especially, we're going to be going around with jumpers and T-shirts and all sorts of things. Mm-hmm. And a lot of women will be made to wear long sleeves and clothes and always wear trousers so that the bruises are hidden, mm-hmm. you know. But I think that point needs to be well made as well. You can be abused without ever being physically abused. You can be emotionally abused, psychologically abused, financially abused, and sexually abused without being physically abused.
Okay. Now, we talked earlier on about the changes in the authorities and the guards over the years and how it's much better now. But in the courts, is there any anomalies there that you'd like to see? Because if something is brought forward, I could be wrong, but it seems to take a long time to come to any sort of end game where they say, you know, it could take 2 years sometimes if a case is brought forward to court.
There's very few cases that go to the criminal court, and one thing we've been really pleased about is we've been very concerned for a long time about particularly in Dublin, that when a woman goes down to Dauphin House or some of the other courts, mm-hmm. that when she gets a protection order, which is the first step before you get a barring order or a safety order, the waiting time up to relatively recently was 12 weeks, it went up to 14 weeks. It's actually now down to 3 weeks. We just had an organisational meeting yesterday, which is phenomenal. I mean, I'm in Women's Aid for over 10 years. It has never been as low as that. And that is real progress. So that means the time lag between a woman goes down and gets her protective order to getting a hearing, to get a barring order or an order. I think there's still a lot of other things that need to change within the courts, and hopefully they will. You know, there needs to be a risk assessment in terms of if you recognise that there's a barring order in place, you need to be careful if somebody's at high risk in terms of if there's an access order at that handover, that can be a site for further abuse. There can be a risk to the children. We need to be risk assessing for making sure that they're safe, that they're well. And also, a lot of, I suppose, there's still a very traditional view in that a bad father is almost better than no father for children. Mm-hmm. Where a bad father, an abusive father, can do untold damage. And we need to get better at setting up situations where we have supervised access and you're properly protecting the non-abusive parent and the children.
Mm-hmm. And if there's anyone listening today, of course, that's involved in a situation like this, as the number is 1800 341 900, but a lot of people sort of can't seem to understand as well that when women are in this situation, they really sometimes can be in such a situation that they feel like they've nowhere they can go. You know, like even if they tell someone, even in the family, as I said, if it, on the outside, if it looks like they're being treated fine, they have this and they have that and they have the other.
When you're in an emergency situation, we will help somebody develop a safety plan. And it may be that somebody's at such a high level of risk, they literally need to go down to the Garda station right now and, and some safety plan put in place about keeping her and her children safe and taking her somewhere that'll safeguard them. Because the important thing about refuge is that it is protective, it's physically protective, and there will be somebody working closely around that. And then it's about putting in place that, you know, you don't stay in refuge forever. So it's about looking at then the longer term and what the impact of that is, and building a safety plan is really, really important.
Okay, finally, Margaret, it's a campaign, 16-day campaign, a yearly campaign, but it's going on all the time, really, in the background. And again, that number is 1800 341 900. After the first week, what's your big message to everybody out now? And I'm talking about everybody, not just the women, everybody out there.
I think that for anybody who feels that maybe there's a neighbour they're concerned about, a colleague they're concerned about, anybody at all, if they go onto our website and have a look at what's there and learn a little bit more about domestic violence, particularly if you're in a role where you're working with young women, with your working with young men, to look at what are good behaviours and bad behaviours, you know, and we can make a change. We can all make a change in the way we live. And I think if we set our minds to it, we can really change things around, and that would make such a big contribution to future generations and to current generations.
Okay, thank you very much. It's been a great pleasure talking to you, and I'll give out all those details again in the course of the programme.
Thank you, you're such a strong supporter. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Margaret. Thank you.
Take care.
Bye. And that's Margaret Martin, Director of Women's Aid. And again, that number is 1800 341 900.